You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This is the Atlanta Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
And we have another habitat-focused podcast right here on Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. This week's podcast brought to you by Deer Lab, the software program for categorizing and studying your trail camera images. Woo, I stumbled a little bit there. What else you got to say about Deer Lab, Matt?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more in detail about Deer Lab, but if you've never used it, it is an incredible software, again, that allows you to not only look at specific images, but analyze why a deer is there at a certain time frame. And that's why we study trail camera images. Like, we need to take it that extra step further, and that's what this software allows you to do. So there's a lot of great things in the software that allows you to learn about individual patterns of deer.
When you look at it or use it the first time, you're like, oh, it's going to categorize. But there's so much more to it.
Oh, yeah.
I think of all the times whenever I would try to do the back research where it's like, okay, I've entered them all in. Okay, now let's look at why. Okay, here's this buck moving during daylight. Let me go back and pull the weather for that specific location. And
you've got 15 tabs opened up to figure out why he was there, but now you have a software program that allows you to put in an image and then mark him, tag that deer in there, and then figure out in one place why he was there at that time.
Yes.
Because it looks at, you know, the weather, the wind, the moon, blah, 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 all these different factors.
And then you can just sort through. So I can say,
yeah,
okay, I want to know what pictures I got of this buck that moved from September 1 to January 1 only during daylight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can say, okay,
here's... And hopefully you have a lot of options.
Hopefully. But if you're like us, you've got three pictures and...
Yeah.
Or let's say you have 20, and then you can say, okay, wow, let's look at the wind direction. What was interesting about that day? Oh, wow.
Or he seemed
90%
to move
a lot
more in the morning.
90% of the pictures are in the mornings. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Half of these are in this location, and it's only on a southeast wind. And then if you find those another day like that, you can slip in there and hopefully take advantage of it. So,
yeah.
Deer Lab, check it out.
You know, this podcast is one, I'm going to say, hopefully for the ages. There's been so much hype and so much social media presence about this, surrounding this broad topic of CWD that has come out just real recently. And we're here to not necessarily talk about CWD in a
good, bad.
Debating. This. No, it is simply, hey, guess what? The science is there. This is being presented from very smart people, and you should heed the warnings. But we're looking at it from, okay, now that it's here, now the science is in front of us, what do we do? How do we manage deer around this? And what is going to change? So it's a hot topic.
I think one thing I would like to say about CWD is the fact of there is a lot of rumors, there's a lot of gossip, and there's a lot of facts about it.
It's kind of like being back in high school.
Yeah,
you know what she did? You heard that?
The telephone game.
Yeah.
Goes all the way around, and by the end of it, somebody's already solved it. Or it's a government conspiracy. But when it comes to this, when it comes to CWD, look for the scientists that study this as your resources and not the opinion of somebody who shoots a deer every year.
Yeah.
So be sure to follow people like the QDMA and really know that that's where we need to be getting our information and not just the opinion of somebody else. So that's where we get a lot of our information, and that's where we follow. And just because there's a lot of updated research and a lot of great information out there. And so you can learn more about CWD from the experts,
well,
not from your Facebook biologist.
Learn facts, learn factual information, consider your resource, and just be practical about it. I mean, just be use common sense when reading and discerning, you know, maybe other people's opinions or whatnot. But the truth of the matter is, like, whether we want to face it or not, we're facing it. And we need to do so with truth and understanding. So,
and like, for example, if my car's broke down, I go to a mechanic. If if there's something about a deer, I go to a deer biologist, somebody who's researched them. If I'm trying to learn how to play baseball, I go to a baseball coach.
Well, or if I'm learning about a disease, you go to a pathologist who's studying that specific disease and the way it's transmitted and the life, the cycle of that. Not a guy who sits in a tree stand and hunts.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, just saying.
No names.
Just saying, right? Stoning it out there.
I would not go to a... let's just end
this. Yeah. All right, moving on. So, before we move to the big topic, want to send out that extra reminder about the QDMA opportunity that we have for the podcast listeners. That's you, for starting June 26th for the next 9 weeks. We're covering those online modules. Like we discussed last week, you're seeing updates probably on Facebook and Instagram about this opportunity. So for the next 9 podcasts, we're going to be talking about this 10 to 20 minutes of each podcast. Adam and I are going through those modules with you guys the same week, and then discussing what we find, what we see, and sharing our experience with you on that topic. So we wanted something this summer to kind of change up the game a little bit, get out of the kind of normal routine, and everyone's wondering what they can do, how they can grow as a hunter, as a land manager. These modules are the perfect way to educate, educate yourself about very specific and important things regarding deer biology, deer hunting management. Like I looked and I did a little sneak peek on the first topic we're going to cover, which is aging deer. And that's, I mean, wait another week and you're going to see your social media just blow up of how old is this deer when people start putting their cameras out. So like, it's very important to learn right now, and you might be able to comment on those posts, share your education with people. But that's the first topic we're covering, and I did a little sneak peek, and they're not talking about like aging deer in the hoof, but analyzing jaw bones and walk you through that step by step. So you're going to want to get that information and use it and apply it, share it with other people.
For sure.
So when you do that, to follow along, use the code that they've provided, and it's www.qdma.com/land and legacy, and that'll give you 20% off the registration cost for those 8 modules.
And sign or 3-letter word?
Huh?
For land and legacy.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? Yes, it's LANDANDLEGACY, land and legacy. Make sure you spell that out. So, but take advantage of that code, get you 20% off, and I'm excited about it. I know you are too. It's going to be a fun opportunity.
It'll be fun. It's interactive. That's what we wanted out of it. We wanted to motivate people to join us in this, and hopefully as we, basically as our friendship with QDMA continues, we'll find other ways to be interactive, maybe with Deer Steward 1 and 2, and who knows what the future holds with that. And I hope one day that we can host an event at our farm. Definitely a goal of ours.
First step.
Yep.
You know, this type of interaction we're trying to build with you guys, who listen so loyally every week, you know, this is going to be fun. And Adam and I have talked about and planned to establish almost a forum, a portion of a Facebook page through Land and Legacy to communicate with you guys throughout the week and what you guys are finding, ask questions. That's going to be, again, that other source of interaction that we
Let's
want
do
to.
It. Let's go ahead and do it when this one releases.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
You already did it. You already told them, so we got to do it now.
But when you sign up, let us know, and we'll all get kind of working on it together. Share your thoughts, share your insight, and what you guys have learned or any questions you got.
Yeah.
It's a great opportunity.
All right. Sure to take advantage of it. CWD, back to the important stuff.
Woo, here we go.
So this is kind of a a podcast that is, it's all in the works as far as there's a lot of things. And the whole reason for this podcast is just this week, Missouri Department of Conservation expanded their CWD counties to where there is 7 or 8 or 10 more counties in the CWD zones that have now made it illegal to use mineral and feeding supplements. So there's no more minerals in a bag or a block or a rock. There's no more feed dumped out on the ground, all in these counties. And I don't know, let's say it's half. I don't know what the exact number is, but half the counties in Missouri are all like this.
I want to say 42 or 48, something like that.
Well, states. I don't even know how many total counties there are off the top of my head. So there's a lot of counties in this state that now are illegal to have mineral or feed out year-round. And this is all a way to stop the spread or slow the spread of CWD in the state of Missouri. With that being said,
I can hear the roar from here. There's just been that uproar.
What? How do I get pictures? And with that being said, Matt and I hunt in two counties, mainly in Missouri, where it is still legal to have those minerals and feeding supplements out. But because of the quick change, we forecast or predict that it in the coming years that it will be illegal statewide. So we are going ahead and removing the minerals and we don't have any feed out at all right now and haven't in months. But we are removing all that and we're going to go ahead and get on the game of no supplements and mineral on our farms. So, with that being...
In conjunction with the release of the information from MDC adding these counties, today a publication has come out from Penn State. And if you don't follow along with their called Deer Force Study, they have produced a blog, I think it comes out maybe twice a week, once or twice a week. But a lot of information that they're doing with all the research that they've got going on as a co-op. So these are the scientists we're talking about that you want to get your information from. But this study looked at CWD, how it's transmitted, but specifically at mineral locations. And they got their information from Wisconsin, and their DNR had teamed up with their University of Wisconsin and then other researchers. And specifically, they looked and tested 11 different mineral licks, 10 of which that were man-made. So likely hunters had gone out and put out mineral licks, like I said, in whatever form it was, a block, a granular, whatever. And they tested not only the soil, but they tested the water. And then water samples when the mud from the bottom is all stirred up. They took all these samples, and what the results say, 9 of the 11 come back CWD positive.
With the prion.
With the prion active there.
And we're not discussing any of the specifics of CWD. We're just saying CWD positive or negative. And 9 out of 11 were positive to have the CWD prion in that area.
Correct. Right there at the mineral lick.
Yes. And that's just...
Now we're done with the podcast.
Do we need to just pause?
Yeah, I think take a moment of silence or something.
To really comprehend that yeah. When they did this test, 9 out of the 11 tested positive for CWD.
So obviously with the MDC moving forward, other states are moving forward with banning these type of sites, these locations, it's most likely, again, a forecast of what is to come in the future for other hunters in other states or other portions of states, that these sites will be banned at maybe a more regular pace. This is very, 9 out of 11, you do the math, that's a not good percentage for active sites that have CWD.
One thing to say too, those were out of CWD positive areas.
Yes.
It wasn't like they just randomly went across Wisconsin
correct.
And found mineral sites. These were in CWD regions, counties, areas, and they tested positive.
So
maybe excuse me if I'm wrong, but I believe they've just now started figuring out how to test soil and water to find out if it had the prion in it. I think that's something new that has happened in this past year. In fact, probably the past 6 months, that they figured out how to make that test to see. Because up until that, there was no way that they were having trouble to find the prion
without
pulling a brain from a deer.
Yeah.
Or a spinal cord or whatever.
Basically, these type of tests is new. And what they're, another note that they even make is that the prions are binding tightly to clay soils. So it can probably suspend differently in soils, but they know and are seeing that from tests, the clay soils is where the prion is binding very tight.
Yeah.
So if
you've got
pawing action, you're removing that rocks from a hole. Like, you get down to clay very easily in many locations. Anyhow, you probably thought crazy as Adam said, well, we're removing them until we shared that information. But in all reality, when we look at, again, the science behind a mineral site and the advantages or disadvantages, or honestly, no value at all that mineral sites give to deer, we're not losing anything.
Here's one of the biggest misconceptions. It talks about that in that blog,
too. It gives another great article.
That minerals cause deer to have bigger antlers.
That's the misconception.
There's been no research ever documenting that the use of minerals
increase antler or weight, antler size or weight in white-tailed deer.
None.
Mic drop again. Let's do we need to pause for that one too?
Yeah.
Let that one sink in. So yes. Again, like if we're making the claim, hey, you know what? We're trying to get ahead of the curve. You know, we're not missing out on anything in a measurable sense of, hey, my deer are going to be lacking. They're going to be, you know, deficient. No, they're actually not, because it's proven. I'm not going to lose any body weight. I'm not going to lose any inches of antlers that I would have had if I had now removed this mineral. The reason for the mineral is because any of these supplements that were can buy at a Walmart or a Bass Pro or wherever you get it.
Feed store.
Yeah. Heavy, heavy salt content. And no doubt deer, especially during the summer months, flock to salt. And I think in this one, this article, it talks about the reason that does need a lot of the salt is for lactation in their diet. Like, they,
it
they
says
need
something
that.
Like, and bucks don't lactate.
Yeah, and bucks don't lactate. So, like, it's not necessary for you to increase the herd health. Like, that's not an argument for mineral. And again, this is scientific information. So this article that we're talking about right here from Penn State, we'll put it in the show notes. So you can read it. There's not really, I guess, room for own interpretations because it's science, but allow you guys to have the same information that we're sharing right here. Have it at your disposal to sink in, to read, to analyze, whatever you want to do with it. We're going to share that with you. But again, we're not losing anything. We're not missing out on anything. The only thing that I guess makes it a little more difficult is documenting deer during the summer to prepare you for fall.
Yes, that's it. That's and that's really what we used mineral for.
This information, I guess, hasn't been new to us. It's just, hey, they come to a salt block. Like, we know that. We get pictures of them.
That's it.
That's been the only reason for that on properties that we hunt, manage. And that's, you ask clients, the same thing we're going to tell them. You know, this is proven. We just kind of leave it up to their disposal. Yeah. But the science is there.
Yes, the science is there that deer don't grow bigger antlers because they have access to mineral. The science is there that you don't get healthier deer because they have access to salt. But the easy thing about it is you put it out, deer come to it, it's easy place for pictures. That's our biggest setback.
As a hunter, I mean, that's a tool. It's not like a, I guess obviously everyone knows us as habitat managers, like the source of nutrients, the source of whatever you're looking to increase antler size and body mass comes from habitat. Like, that's what we preach. And so this, again, is just simply a tool that is used to get deer in front of a camera.
It's
easier.
Yeah, it's not used as a habitat.
No, exactly.
It's not used as a habitat improvement technique. It's used as a hunting strategy, not specifically during season.
Correct.
But to get pictures
to prepare you for season.
Before season, so we know who's in the area.
Yeah.
That's what it's used for. And so let's just kind of, as we start this, let's start out by saying that kind of one of the biggest principles with our management and our ideas of management and laying out land and improving land is replicating nature. It's always been that. It's always going to be that. We're going to do our best to replicate nature in its native state. And so when you think about it, sure, there are natural mineral licks. There's natural sites in
present in the ecosystem. Yeah.
To where deer or other animals will go to seek out salt. But they're not nearly as prevalent as a hunting property that has one out every 40 acres.
Yeah.
And so basically for us, when you think about the landscape, how many times have you heard us talk about this? We don't know yet. We've already lost track counting. How many times do you hear us say, click back the time frame and go, before we got here and before there was trail cameras and all that stuff, before America was settled.
Go back to when God designed it, and that's the way it was.
And deer and buffalo and elk had everything they needed naturally across their landscape. And they were way more productive than they were now. This kind of, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, this is not about minerals or CWD, but it is an example. When we look at the native landscape in, let's say, Kansas and its prairies, how often did they burn? Frequently. How many eastern red cedars did they see in that landscape? Not very frequent because they burned up. But yet people are planting cedars in fields to add more cover because they need thermal cover. Look at the winters, or go back to even early 1900s, 1800s. Winters were much more severe than we have now, but yet deer still survived. How did they do it? It wasn't because there was eastern red cedar, but they did it with diversity in other plants. So this is just that's me going on my eastern red cedar tangent.
I'm sitting here seeing this rabbit in my mind. Like, I'm like, okay, we're hitting these points. We're nailing them. Everyone's like, yeah, go guys. And then there's Adam. Like, there's this rabbit, and it just runs off to the right. I'm like, okay, it's running, but it's got to make a turn back to that, like, center point. It's
whatever.
Not turning. It's not coming back yet.
There's two guarantees in our podcast, and I will go on rabbit trails. But when Matt will go on a rabbit trail, he goes on a long rabbit trail. At least mine are short.
I was beginning to think you were getting long-winded on that one.
So anyway, that's just one of our examples of managing the native landscape and understanding that. And this is a great example of mineral sites and how they're not that common. Especially, I mean, Matt, think of a mineral site, a naturally occurring mineral site on my farm. None. I can't think of any. And so we want to replicate nature, and this is one step for us to do it and try to, although it's not been detected in our region of Missouri, we're going ahead and doing the precautionary steps to hopefully prevent the spread of it if it is there and it's undetected.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that might come up is someone may say, okay, I understand that, like, these mineral blocks don't add or they're not proven to produce bigger antlers or bigger body size, but like, how else do deer get their minerals? Well, that's just by plants. They eat plants, but the plants have roots that are in the dirt and the soil, and they take in those minerals and they transfer them through the forage. So it's not like deer won't get these minerals. They still get them, and that's the natural process in which they get them. So again, we're not removing anything that's necessary for deer or any other mammals to survive. It's simply, again, just that tool to get more pictures in one specific location. And that's the other thing I think I got for later on. But you can put out a block in a very unintrusive area and pull deer and not have to go into maybe a more sensitive area throughout the summertime and get very accurate information of the deer that are on your property. You know, like, okay, maybe I give that up a little bit. I'm okay with that. Because again, I'm getting hopefully ahead of the direction things are heading. Mm-hmm. And again, this, yes, we're in Missouri. There's counties very close by who, cannot bait, who cannot feed. But even if you're not, still listen up, because this can easily affect you if there's a portion of your state that has it like that. And the snap of a finger, legislation can change, and your whole state now is not, you know, baiting mineral friendly.
Yeah, and I think of a mineral block that's been established for several years.
You mean a little mini swimming pool?
Yeah, that cesspool.
Yeah,
I mean
a little hot tub.
Yeah, just stewing with bacteria, and they're not. I mean, or you see one of those feed stations where people have dumped protein pellets or corn all winter long, and you get there in the spring, and it's just a nasty mud pit, and you can smell it.
It's a feed lot.
It is. And
there ain't no way to have your cattle. There ain't no way to have your deers.
And whenever you confine animals, that's usually when bad things happen. And so it's just one of those things that, knowing how CWD is, trying to prevent that. That's what we're all about. So we're removing the mineral sites. Now is how do we get pictures of deer and establish a hit list and know who's in the area, know the health of the deer herd based on our trail cameras, when we don't have the ability to have minerals out or feed out.
This is the meat of the podcast. This is the point where now we're like, all right.
Took us 26 minutes to get here.
This is what we want to share. We want to share that practical information to allow you to not miss a beat as you're going, still managing your property.
Yes, and I think of this is, even if you're in an area, and even if you're hard-headed and you say, this isn't all true, well, if you're there, you probably already turned this podcast off. But if not, we're still glad to have you. If you are in an area that you can use feed, you can use all that. These tips and these areas are still, could be, I guess they could still be useful for you to find a hitless buck during hunting season or year-round.
No doubt.
Because these are the areas or areas that you can add to not only create great bottlenecks to hunt over, but also to have your cameras out so you can monitor what deer go through there.
And I will say there is additional research that has already been done on the efficiency of non-baited trail camera surveys. That information, that publication, I don't think has been released yet, but it is... the studies, the actual in the field stuff has been done, and that's pretty positive that it's going to be presented on at QDMA convention this year.
It is.
And
Dr. Carl Miller, right?
That's it. So this is coming, whether you're ready or not, or getting there in your mind. Be seeking out information that's going to, again, allow you to not miss a beat. Keep up to date with what's going on your property, even though things, regulations may be changing around you.
All right.
Ready?
Yep. I think they're ready. They waited long enough.
I think the important thing is be practical. A mineral block, I think, has honestly, because of the easiness of it, has taken away most hunters' woodsmanship.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, again, it's been easy to throw one out in a place that you can kind of drive up to, pull a car, and get back out. Like, they all go there. And like, that's not, you're not managing a herd by having that out there, but you're also not really helping yourself as a hunter. Like, you're not analyzing the habitat. You're not looking at deer sign. You're not understanding how deer are moving through an area. You're not understanding where they're feeding at, what they're feeding on, where they're bedding at typically at this time of the year. Like, we've, for many people, we've lost that. That's a skill. That's such a valuable skill, and it's gone. I'm not blaming it on minerals, but I'm just saying, like, let's be practical and what we're trying to do here, but be practical in the sense of understanding deer. and what they're needing right now and where they're getting that. So you got to understand your property.
There was a rabbit trail that I fought, but I got to go down it. And the same thing can be said about feeders and baiting. I think the same thing is true. There's a huge debate that we're probably going to catch flack over on that statement. Or at least I am, because I'm the one doing the talking. But feeding and baiting has done the same thing to woodsmanship.
Taking it away.
It's much easier. And I would even have a guy, if a guy started telling me about food plots doing the same thing, I would probably even listen and say, you know, there's some truth to that, but there's more to a food plot than just, for us, there's more to a food plot than just the ability to hunt over it. There's a lot of things involved and that's why we plant diversity too, because we have so few acres. We're trying to improve it for a multitude of species. That's why there's pollinators that really like our food plot varieties, because there's so many more benefits. So it's not just about that. But some instances, yes, a food plot would be similar to a feeder as far as its only purpose is to have a hunting destination. And that's where the woodsmanship comes into it.
Yeah, and again, that...
Or is removed from it, I should say.
Right. So... If you're sitting here scratching your head, okay, I'm lost without them. Get a notepad out, because we're gonna help you get through this. And I just had this horrible analogy in my head. You know the joke when you're like in college or whatever, and they're like, I pulled your man card. And you're like, so. Mineral Blocks pulled my woodsmanship card. We're getting your woodsmanship cards back.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So I hope that was not offensive. That was not trying to be offensive, but it just popped in my head. I was like, you know what? I got to share that.
Yeah.
So summertime, you're trying to document deer. It's pretty easy. Natural water sources.
Yeah.
Like,
natural ones. And as we talked about this, this wasn't a little bitty tiny swimming pool that you put somewhere and fill it up with water.
Yep.
Because... when you look at the size, it's not much different than a mineral lick. So,
a constant, it's not like a resurging flow of water, like a spring that's got like a small opening. Like that's new fresh water. That's just a kind of a stagnant, you know,
mud
kiddie
puddle.
Pool.
Yeah.
We're talking natural water sources.
Natural water sources. And these are easy to find when you just go and look for tracks. Like, to me, I think of all the little wet spots you find on a little wet weather creek down in the bottom. And during the summer, we start getting drier, and the creeks that don't flow year-round start to shrink up to where there's bigger holes scattered around. Find the hole that's got the most tracks around it. Put a camera on it.
Yeah, and that's... perfect point. And one thing to note is right now most places are getting rain, so vegetation has a lot of moisture in it. They don't need to go to a water source as consistently right now, but as summer gets going, August time frame, when you're really trying to take in and see who's out there, make your plans for fall, that vegetation is now typically lacking a lot of moisture, so now they're going to find water sources that time of year more so than now and get water that way. So when you're out in August, find those water sources. You can document deer very consistently there.
And I think with this transition to where we're no longer confining deer to mineral sites or feed stations, and it's always, okay, how do I figure out where they're traveling? How can I get pictures? This is where habitat improvement is going to be key.
Mm-hmm.
And really trying to designate and find specific bedding areas and then specific feeding areas and specific travel corridors. And the reason I bring this up is because when you think of a water source that's like, I don't know how they're getting here, and I don't know how to, if I put it on this side of the water hole, how do I know they're not going to the other side?
Uh-huh.
That's where the next one of, and it's down the list, but like edge feathering or hinging trees, dropping trees to try and steer the deer to a more specific area to get to that water source, or as we list out this long list of things you can do. If there's five trails leading to this one area, drop a tree over two of them and try to find where the other three trails intersect, or two of them get close together and put the camera there.
Yeah, and that's the other thing of, like, you know, you might have to get off the beaten path a little bit to find these areas, But again, like you said, knowing where deer are bedding at and knowing when you're going too far, that's important. You really need to know that. So having designated bedding areas on a property, and if you want to know how to do that, go back to a bunch of podcasts where we talk about timber, because I'm sure we covered it. But put deer in specific areas and kind of know where they're focusing at. And so you know when you start to do a little scouting that you're not getting too close. You're not putting that extra pressure on them.
Yes.
The next one, you kind of covered it right there, but trail intersections. Like, that's a no-brainer. Yeah. And maybe you can find those in areas that are easy to get to. That might be close to a field edge where or a bottleneck that you can kind of drive up along the edge of a field, pop in, pull a camera card, get back out. And that's the other thing. It doesn't matter if these are all nighttime photos. Like, it doesn't matter.
For the most part, they're probably going to be nighttime photos if it's hot, unless you're really close to the bedding and you're on a north slope. And that kind of reminds me, if you're looking for trails during the summer months, they could be different than the typical trails that you really follow during the fall and winter.
They most likely will be.
Find those trails that they're using during the summer months. That could be north slopes. That could be along a river. Cool spot. They're trying to stay cool during the summer months. But also note finding the limited resource. Where's the food source for that area during that time of the year? Where's the water source for that time of the year? I'm thinking July. It just seems like July 4th is when we really start pounding out the cameras. Mm-hmm. It starts getting hot. Looking for the water source, looking for the food source, and then finding the trails that are leading to those.
Yeah, exactly. Find those trail intersections. And again, it's not like you're trying to hunt these deer right now. You don't have to have daylight images, just as long as you're getting images of the deer using those areas.
And even if you're not, who cares? Go hunt anyway.
Get out there. But trail intersections, find them. They're easy. You can probably locate some areas on aerial map and go in and kind of ground scout from what you saw on that map and find a place, put up a camera and let them sit too. That's the other thing. Let these cameras sit and work for you. 3 days, 4 days likely isn't enough time. Let them sit and deer get used to all that. And those patterns also may change a little bit, you know, throughout the summertime. So if you're confident that this is a good intersection, set it, let it work for you.
Use lithium batteries and those trail cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
They may cost a little bit more at the initial purchase, but they are worth it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just a shameless plug, no affiliation, nothing. Just get lithium batteries.
Yes. Edge feathering. This is just as simple as it seems. You can...
It's a habitat improvement.
Bottleneck deer.
Yes, and we talked about it, open and closed edge feathering. As far as cutting more species on the closed one that are parallel with the edge of the food plot and more of them that are perpendicular with the edge of the food plot to where deer can walk through it more easy than the closed ones, the closed edge feathering. These are ways that you can steer deer. So if you have, let's say, you have a 50-yard stretch at the edge of a food plot and the deer enter it from every part of it, edge feather, closed edge feather, 40 yards on one side and 10 yards on the other, and you have a little strip there of, well, I don't even know in my head what I say, 50 yards to where they're going to walk through now, and drop one tree in the middle and try to send them on either side of that. And you automatically have more of a pinch, and you put them into a 20-yard gap that you can put a camera on and find the best trail.
Yeah.
That's just one simple way of doing it. You can do that in food plots. You can do that in meadows or glades. You can do that pretty much anywhere.
Yep,
you can do it in the middle of the woods. Drop some trees in a single file line that through a section of timber that deer are all walking through, and just put the camera on the end of the last fallen tree and get pictures of the deer as they walk around those treetops.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
It's that simple. The next one, we're talking about cutting trees, hinge cutting. I'm going to combine the next two, hinge cutting and mineral stumping. If you've done work, if you are following us in the wintertime, hopefully we encouraged you to go out and do some TSI. That's the perfect place right now to see what deer are foraging on, because that's tender shoots. That's a lot of forage out there. And I guarantee you can get in there, find those areas, put up a camera, and have deer routinely coming in and foraging through that habitat improvement project that you did. That's super simple.
Super easy.
That's a no-brainer.
I mean, so easy a caveman can do it.
Yeah. He probably does do it.
That's how it kills him, because he's got woodsmanship.
Yeah. So those are great locations. Food plot. I mean, you're like, duh, food plot. If you got a food plot, put it on the edge of the woods. Like, you don't have to have that mineral station there. You can do so many different types of, you can do video, you can do just pictures, set up the right intervals.
Field scan,
yep. Time lapse, whatever. But if you got deer going to a food plot, put a camera there. Mount it so you can survey a large view of the field. You might not get the detail, but you're going to know if it's a older age class buck and go from there.
And that's why we like smaller mid-sized food plots better than large ones.
Large fields, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Takes way less seed.
Right? Another one, and this sounds dumb, but field edges. Like, if you're not a food plotter, even if you're not in crop country, deer always are going to walk the edge, and they're probably browsing and foraging on species that are growing right there along the edge, unless you have a browse line that's way out of reach. But they're going to keep coming back to looking for that new forage. So any field edge, boom, you got it.
Somebody told me one time deer were creatures of the edge. I don't know if it's true or not.
You know, I heard the same thing. We ought to look into that stuff. Maybe they're onto something.
I think so. I always see deer along the edge. Yes, edge, putting them on the edge, even a pasture, is a great thing.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, I think of, I forgot to add that to the notes, but in cattle country, for a lot of guys that are trying to manage and hunt deer and locate deer in cattle country, here's my brain buster of advice. Put the cameras where the cows aren't.
Yeah.
To me, that's one of the, at the family farm, if I wanted to find deer, I'll just put them on the other side of the fence where the cows aren't, because deer are going to move through those areas a lot more frequently than through the middle of the cattle pasture.
It's no doubt. If you've got areas that have got pockets of pasture, they got really good clover, maybe if it's a low spot, clover typically grows there, hey, you might have some deer in there. White clover, red clover, or you've got an alfalfa field. It's not necessarily crop ground, but your granddad cuts it for hay. Man, you already know if you got an alfalfa field.
You already have to tell them. They're already like, don't give away that secret.
Yeah.
Yes. Another thing to do in cattle country is find those fence crossings.
Mm-hmm.
Find those gaps to where deer are crossing them, or find that area where you see more deer frequently going through the area, and it may be a whole little side of the field or whatever, and tie that top strand just a little bit lower than the rest of the fence, and just because it's 6 inches lower creates more of a bottleneck, because deer, that's the path of least resistance for the deer, so they use it. I think of areas in cattle country, if you're rotating the cows and you have 5-strand barbed wire fence, leave some of those gates open where the cows can't get, and make it the easiest way for deer to get through there, and put a camera on the gate that's open and watch the deer travel through it, and as well as all the other animals that are using that farm.
Mm-hmm.
Bears and bobcats and coyotes.
Yeah. Licking branches. Deer, yes, communicate through these year-round.
Oh, gosh. What's the difference between that and a mineral stump? We're going to tell you, because that's naturally occurring.
Yep.
Regardless of what...
You said mineral stump. You mean...
Oh, mineral licks. Yeah, mineral licks, mineral locations. I said mineral stumps. Just to clarify, I mean where we pour out mineral. So what's the difference between a licking branch, a scrape, and a mineral station, feed station? Naturally occurring, not naturally occurring. And that goes with, okay, mock scrapes aren't much different than a mineral station then too, because we're making something and confining deer or putting deer in a specific spot. So the other side of that is we're going to find naturally occurring licking branches, and we're going to put cameras there because deer are going to use them. Whether we're there or not, deer are naturally going to use licking branches, scrapes, rubs.
They have glands that are active throughout the entire year. That's how they communicate with one another. They might not be pawing, scraping the ground, or transferring the exact same sent through those glands, but they still are communicating with one another. So if you have one of those on the edge of your food plot, or anywhere for that matter, you can find them in the woods in the right places. If you're looking, if you have woodsmanship.
Roads.
Yeah, if you have those woodsmanship skills still, you can find those.
Yes.
That's a great place. Deer go out of their way. Boom, hit it.
Or I think of, I forget what they call them, what I've heard people call them, but rubs that are rubbed every single year. That's another place. It's not in the notes, but it just came to me. I think of when we go to Nebraska and Kansas, Iowa, you see those old fence posts, those wooden fence posts that get rubbed every single year. That's another place you can put a camera on and monitor them and see what deer are using that area.
Yeah, they might not be rubbing it in the summer, but if it's in one of those locations that they walk by consistently. One,
oh, I was talking fall, but yeah, okay. You could.
I mean, there's, so I've still seen deer go up and sniff those rubs. Mm-hmm. Like, they still will, they know it's a place where deer congregate. But yeah, I mean, it totally, it can be done, because you're talking about Nebraska and those Kansas and Iowa places. A lot of times, those areas, you don't necessarily have the big woods like we have around here. So
yes.
Those are in locations that they go to every single year because, again, deer travel it daily. Uh-huh. So it's just naturally going to be, use the deer sign as a sign to tell you that deer commonly go through here.
Whoa, that was complicated.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
I got through it. But seriously,
and
that's just
when you say
practical.
Licking branches too, that's also during the summer months. So mm-hmm. The edge of a food plot, large field, deer still will check those. Now, they may not go up there and rip up the ground and scrape, but they'll still check it if they mm-hmm. go by it. And that's one way that you could just scratch up the ground a little bit right there and have them just even smell the fresh dirt. As they walk by. So that's all, that's definitely a thing you can do. What else?
Creek crossings.
Oh, I love this one. I think of a lot of creek crossings, a lot of great pictures I've had over the years during the summer months as deer were bedded on a north slope on a creek bottom. It's a lot cooler there. There's a lot more green vegetation that they could browse on. But they would cross the creek going out to a big crop field.
Talk about consistent.
Very consistent. Especially the steeper the bank, the better.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And that's why I look at a lot of the places we've walked with our consulting business is how many creeks have we walked by or been on? And it's just like, man, are you kayaking this? Are you using mm-hmm. a flat bottom? And it's a lot of times, no. It's like, this is stupid how easy this is. Float it, pop up, hunt right on the bank, hunt that creek crossing. It's going to be dynamite.
Yep, game over.
It's a lot of times it's one of those that you could set on September 15th and kill a good deer, or January 15th and kill a good deer.
Oh, yeah. No
so
doubt.
Creek crossings, definitely a place to put a camera year-round.
And if you're having those areas, just, I guess, in all of these, be smart of when you're checking your cameras.
Yes.
You know, if you're expecting deer to be out there at dusk or dawn, don't go check it at dawn. Like, it's that simple. I mean, it's tempting to do it after work, but wait till Saturday when you can go in the middle of the day.
Woodsmanship.
Yeah.
If the deer you
We're
believe...
We're making a new hashtag. Hashtag woodsmanship.
Too bad we'll all... What is woodsmanship?
Yeah.
That's
the thing that mineral block took from you.
Where's that card at that I lost somewhere?
Get your W card back.
Yeah. So, and this is another thing. If the wind is out of the north and you expect the deer to be the south of where you're going, don't go and check your camera then. Check your cameras. Chances are if you're going to check during the hunting season, if you're going to check all your cameras the same day, at some point you're bumping deer. And that's something we're guilty of. We've mm-hmm. done. And it's something we're all guilty of. But as we start this process of not building our inventory, each week our camera's out there, it's very critical to be getting all the intel we can. So not boogering up those camera locations is hugely important. Important.
Oh, and you know another tip? Especially for summertime, face them north. Those cameras north.
And cut out, get that camera tilted down just a touch.
Yep.
Chad, I'm talking to you here. That's my brother.
North, you're not going to have that blown out, overexposed image and then just kind of have that, like, maybe silhouette if you're lucky. And you're like, oh, who? What is that? Oh, he's got big bases, but I can't see the antlers.
Yeah, the sun's blowing it out.
Don't face it east or west. Go north on that Joker. Another one, and you added this one in late, but it's a great one. It's fruit trees.
Oh, love it, love it. Anybody listening to the podcast know I love the idea of planting fruit trees. And not just for my personal benefit, but the wildlife as well. Fruit trees. I've done this a lot where, in fact, I mean, we've talked about this before. Stark Brothers fruit trees, if you've ever looked them up, I kind of have a connection way down the road. In 1892, Stark Brothers bought my family farm, and then 1952, my granddad bought it back. But there are scattered fruit trees across the landscape. To where there may be a peach tree somewhere, there may be a pear tree somewhere, there may be an apple tree, just randomly on the edge of a field. And when it bears fruit, it's a huge attraction because there's not a whole lot of them out there, even a persimmon tree. Any of these fruit trees, now there's a lot of them that drop during honey season, but there's some that drop during the summer months. Anna apple comes to mind that drops from like June to August. Peach trees drop in late summer. There's plums that drop late summer. There's even cherry trees that drop during the summer. I don't even remember what else I have, but there's fruit trees that you can find that specifically produce. Pear trees drop in late summer that produce fruit during late summer when by this time most of the bucks have developed their entire rack and it's really easy to identify them. But how do we get them to our spots without mineral and feed? Fruit trees is one of those. Plant an orchard. I'll give you an example. On our cattle farm, we have our orchard fenced off. We're going to lower one portion of it where it's a little bit easier to get into. We're going to drop a few trees on the other corners, and boom, we have basically one trail coming into that orchard that we can put a camera on and catch all the deer that go into there at night or during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. Plus, we get the benefit of the fruit, too.
I'm getting... Hashtag woodsmanship again. Be able to identify fruit trees, because a lot of times they're more common in a landscape than what a lot of people often believe.
FYI, Bradford pear is not a fruit tree.
Correct. But learn to identify them and then know specific where that tree is located, know when it typically drops, and when you need to have a camera there on place to document deer.
And if you found one, but it's getting crowded out and you want it to produce more fruit, open up that canopy and give it more sunlight. Give it more nutrients because of opening up that canopy. Prune it.
Ooh,
make it a,
prune that joker.
Make it a healthier tree so it produces more fruit.
You know, that's a pretty good lineup. That's a pretty good way to document who the heck is on your farm throughout a summer month.
Absolutely.
I know that the research that Carl Miller and his team have done regarding the non-baited trail camera surveys, I know that the numbers that they produced and basically the effectiveness, the accuracy of the total population is very strong. So this type of information that we're sharing is probably baseline. But this other information that's going to be coming out and even more published is going to be accurate, useful, as we get more and more, I guess, informed about CWD and as more regulations come out. So be watching and understand possibly the future of what's going to happen in the whole deer world and mineral world. And supplemental feed world?
I think it's all going to come back to, it's going to cause us to have to do, hopefully, more habitat work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was too easy with mineral and feed just dumped out on the ground.
Lost your W card.
Lost it. Yep. It was just too...
Stole it.
It was too easy. And so...
And you know what? I'm not going to miss it. I'm glad that, you know, some things don't come easy. That's okay, because you're going to become a better hunter. The skills that you're learning to be able to accurately identify where deer are spending the majority of time during the summer months, you're going to be able to find sign during the fall and winter so much easier. It's going to scream at you as you walk through the woods because there's so much vegetation out there right now. You're like, I'm just kind of like in a jungle. It's tough to see this stuff. But when the leaves fall and there's sign everywhere and deer are really active, this deer sign that you want to key in on as a hunter is going to become very apparent.
I think if we're all honest with ourselves when it comes to the mineral stations and the feed stations, like let's just pull five people. Let's say your wife and your kids aren't hunters and you're like, I just want to show them this, like take them on the farm and see if what their opinion of a mineral station that's been there for a long time and it's a mud pit. I bet it's not a very good opinion. It's not going to look great to them. And it's just to me, it's a little bit bittersweet because it's like, well, that was a really easy way to get pictures. But then again, this is only going to cause us to be more motivated to improve the habitat.
Well, and that's the thing. Like if you were or are a person who does mineral blocks and supplemental feeds, like if let's just say you can't do it anymore, one, you're gonna have a lot of time on your hands because supplemental feeding programs, if you're strict about it, are time consuming
and cost a lot. Your wife's gonna be pumped.
Yeah, put that same, don't I guess look on a bright side and see, okay, now I'm just gonna improve my habitat. Like if you've thought about it, if you're, like Adam said earlier, if you're still listening to the podcast, you care about the habitat. That time that you don't have now to be devoted to a supplemental feeding program, devote it into feeding the deer with natural browse.
That's done. Something, the habitat work, awkward pause, crickets.
that was mic drop.
awkward, yeah, I think the habitat improvement is something, regardless, hunter or not, it's something we can all get behind.
Yeah.
And so my question is, when we're doing all this, what do we do with it? How do we take this and how do we take all these pictures, these random pictures? Because it's not going to be a 500 pictures a week of deer with their head down licking a block or licking a right. rock. And you just say, oh, like
you're not skipping through like these images. You're going to be click. Okay, who's that? Then click. It's not like the same deer there for 5 minutes or 10 minutes and like they don't hardly move. They flick an ear and you're like, oh my gosh, get out of my picture.
If you've looked at pictures long enough, you know the difference between the click scan or the push and hold down scan.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm talking about the arrow button where you're just like, you push it and hold it down because you can see that one doe just standing there and you're like, oh my gosh, leave.
Move on,
whenever
please.
You have, and that's why I love cameras in the fall because it's deer in their natural setting for the most part as far as traveling through the landscape. And you may have way less pictures, but those pictures you get could be really cool.
They're most likely the pictures that you want to be having. And like I said, what do you do with them? You put them in the deer lab. Like you get the information that the camera collects. And I think that's what the most common misconception is with trail cam images just in general. It's not just an image. Like if you're using them just to get a picture, then you're missing the important part of why you have trail cameras out there, and that's to learn individual behaviors of deer. And we talked about it earlier, like I think in the intro of like you got to analyze when they were there.
Yes, why they were there. Yeah. What caused them to be
what
there?
What resources are there?
And why they moved at that specific time.
Right. When were they there?
In the past, when you look at pictures, we may have been like, oh, that's cool. He's there. But if you're really trying to dial in and figure that deer out to harvest him, it's a, you look at it and go, okay, which direction did he come from? What time of the day is he there? And which way did he leave? Now, what brought him there? If it's a scrape line or a trail camera or trail camera, a logging road, like it's
I gotta get my picture taken.
It's a picture of a trail camera. It's a picture of a picture.
Let's go get in the photo booth.
Yeah. So it's basically you're monitoring a trail and you're like, okay, where's he headed? Where's he coming from? It mm-hmm. looks like he's coming by at 5:30 in the morning and it gets light at 6. So he's headed back to bed somewhere, but it looks like he's probably, for the most part, getting close to his bedding area because it's almost daylight, and I know he probably wasn't moving at that point. And you're just putting all this together, and it's really a mind game of going, well, okay, how
totally
can I,
a mind
it's, a,
game.
It's a puzzle, jigsaw puzzle, trying to figure out what's going on. And this Deer Lab will help you with that. It will speed the process up. It's not a technology is taking your woodsmanship away.
No.
We're doing this already. It just gives us a place to put all the pictures to where I'm not completely losing all my hair or turning it gray because I have 20 tabs open, one monitoring barometric pressure, one monitoring wind direction, one monitoring temperature and humidity.
One looking at the future forecast. Like,
yeah. The moon phase.
Yeah.
All that stuff. This is just putting it right there to where I can sort it out and say, okay, I have five pictures of this buck during daylight, during hunting season. Is there any pattern to those? No. Okay, on to the next buck. Yeah. Or, wow, there really is a pattern. My heat map shows that he's really up in this region of the farm, and when he's in that region of the farm, he's only moving during the afternoons. I'm going to hunt that deer on an afternoon when the wind's correct, when the barometric pressure's a right setting, and go mm-hmm. in and harvest him. And that's where you go back to where if you, as you sign up for Deer Lab and you start using it, use last year's images. Put them in there. It will take that same information, and you can figure out and start building a history with a buck.
Yeah, just because you're not putting an image into Deer Lab like real time, if you put it in, it will gather the data from that time it took the picture. Like, use that as a tool to build the history with the deer. You don't have to write it down in a special note. Like, that's the beauty, I think, of the software itself is it not only organizes bucks as individual bucks, and you can create a profile for each deer, but all that information that you're putting together, like, it keeps it together. So, if again, like you said, if you want to sort this individual buck and find out when, let's just say, for instance, we've got a great 4.5-year-old deer that shows up. We knew him as a 2.5 and a 3.5-year-old deer. Before season gets here, one, we're going to find him during the summertime or get pictures of him. Okay, he's here. We want to harvest that deer. Like, I'm not going to look at, you know, this food plot and say, okay, he's going to be here at some point. I'm going to kill him that food plot. What we're going to do is go back into Deer Lab and say, okay, as a 2.5-year-old, what did he do? As a 3.5-year-old, when were the times that he preferred to move? Was it dawn? Was it dusk? Was there a wind direction that he preferred to move? What location did he prefer to move in? Like, where was his concentration? And then build stands off of those patterns to harvest him specifically. Like, I'm not going to say it's not a guessing game, but you're taking all the information from images and putting it together to have a hunting strategy. And I don't know, like, to me, you can't really put a price on it, as in, if you're just, again, going through trail camera images to look at deer, you're missing the important factor of using that as a hunting strategy from years past.
If you want to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's an awesome, awesome tool.
Yes. In a world of pressure deer, it's a tool that
oh.
is really important.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
It really gives you an idea. And frankly, it's awesome just to get pictures of them.
So Deer Lab, though, is offering it's a 30-day trial for...
3 months, I thought. I don't remember. Something like that.
You get time to play on there.
Yeah, you get plenty of time regardless of what it
yeah.
is. Plenty of time.
So www.deerlab.com/land-and-legacy. You get that code to be able to trial. It's a free trial. There we go. For an extended period
of
time.
You said /land-and-legacy. It's /land. We really should have went back and looked at this. Deerlab.com. Man, I should have brought my notes. Deerlab.com.
/land.
L-A-N-D. And you will get a trial period where you can have 250 images,
mm-hmm.
and you can put 250 images of bucks on there and then turn around and delete them and put 250 more on there.
Yes.
And that's one property, 10 cameras.
Yep. Up to 10 cameras for this trial period.
And basically you can lay out your farm, put different dots for the camera locations, enter those photos. It'll give you a heat map of a specific buck on which area he hung out more. And There's a lot of great information. I encourage you to check it out. It's free trial, so you can see if you like it before you make the purchase. But I'll bet you like it.
Well, and that's the thing. Just play with it. Just go in there, put all your trail camera images in there. See what you can gather, what I guess you can learn from bucks that you didn't already know existed, that information. We're going to be doing Facebook Lives and stuff throughout the summer, us going through camera cards and camera pulls and putting this information into our own deer lab. And then there's actually a share button, a way that we're going to share.
We're going to soon share albums.
Yes.
Where you can see all the pictures of different bucks we've had in the past and future. Now, or not future, but this season.
Yeah. I'm going to get
future
him.
Future as in, like in 10 years, I'm going to have this 200-incher.
Yeah.
No, in future, as in this fall, we're going to be sharing the bucks that we inventory, and right. You can check them out anytime you want.
And that feature is open, too. If you're in like a QDM co-op and you want to use that feature and kind of share within all the co-op members of like, hey, this is what everyone's getting, it doesn't give like the location of your cameras. It just gives...
Or the map.
None of that.
Nothing but the pictures.
Yeah, just pictures. Hey, guys, this is what showed up. Kind of lets everyone communicate within that neighborhood or community of what's going on. So just another cool thing. Share it and see what your friends say and see if you got the biggest one around or the smallest, the dink on your farm.
I'm only putting forky horns and spikes on there.
Camera pool
sucks. That's all I got, guys.
Sucks again this week.
And we cool say feature. This all because we are amping up for trail camera season. We're all starting to get... We pulled cards first time this week. And so it's important. Now you're starting to get the pictures. What do you do with them? Check out Deer Lab. Try the promo code or the link, deerlab.com/land. And you can check it out for a certain amount of time. Yeah. So anyway,
you guys,
Matt, would you rather plant a food plot if you show up to a farm and you have a certain amount of equipment and all you have is a two-bottom plow and you have a nice...
That thing's going in the dumpster. Yeah.
Scrap it, baby. Yeah. You have a plow and a harrow and a drag.
Yeah.
Would you rather plant a food plot having to use those tools or not?
I would simply use drag.
No, I said you can use all of it or none of it.
Oh, what?
It's not which one would you... This game isn't which one would you use. It's would you rather, yay or nay.
Do I have any... Like, do I have a chainsaw to go and do other habitat management? I kind of understand my possibilities.
The question is, would you plant a food plot if your equipment was a two-bottom plow and harrow, or would you not... Would you rather do it or not? It's very simple. Answer the
I'm
question.
I'm a creative thinker. And it would be no. It would be no.
Because
I couldn't
it's
do
too
it.
Destructive. That the disadvantage is not worth the advantage. The problems, the long-term effects of doing that.
Yeah, I would literally
really
forego.
Set you up, and I should have not even asked you the question. I said, would you rather do this? The answer is no. That's the correct answer.
I would
answer.
Seriously forego planting food plots. I would too. I'm that serious about the
destruction.
Yeah. Well, never mind. I was going to go somewhere else. Okay, would you rather... let me think of one real quick because I don't have one. Would you rather...
Got another good one.
All right.
Oh, never mind. I already asked it.
You already asked
way
it.
Back. I was going to say, would you rather have a set of stack and six or a climber stand?
Oh, okay.
I did ask that
would
one.
Would you rather plant a summertime fruit forage or a pear that dropped late September? Knowing the information that was in the podcast today.
Yeah, summer.
Summer.
Because late September is... Acorns are everywhere, so
yeah.
Most likely there's acorns everywhere, so I'm gonna go with the late summer so I can at least build an inventory then.
There we go. That was a pretty good would you rather off the top of my head.
Yeah, there you go. Wow, that was a doozy. You got
that was
else?
A doozy. Just reminder, next week we're talking about aging deer 10-20 minutes of the podcast.
That is qdma.com/LandonLegacy.
Correct. Sign up for it.
L-A-N-D-A-N-D-L-E-G-A-C-Y.
You will see a forum pop up on our page as we're preparing for that this coming week. Get ready for it. Hope you guys will join and learn along with us.
And check out deerlab.com/land.
We got it.
Land.
Nailed it.
Check those out. We'd appreciate it. And leave us a review sometime.
And if this podcast is what you want to hear or you want to share with someone, share it. Because this is going to be a doozy. We're excited and ready for the comments back.
I'm putting my helmet on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's why we want to share it. That's exactly this type of information. Sometimes tough, but it's important to share the right information and consider the sources.
And I'll share with you guys, we really appreciate the support over the last year and a half. It's been incredibly humbling and inspirational. It's, you know, with the creation of Land and Lakes, it was kind of on a whim kind of thing where you're like, I don't really. And we started it, and you guys have been so supportive, and we just love you for it. And we promise you that we will make it up to you guys over the course of this adventure. But our success is because of your support and your continued support. And the way that you can support us the most is by sharing this with your friends and family and getting them interested in listening to the podcast and watching the films and liking the Facebook page.
No doubt.
And so that's where we're asking you now to, if hopefully you can share more, interact with us more, check out our Facebook page as we add more things to be more interactive, and we owe you so much.
We shared a text, you and I, back and forth today of there's decisions that are going on, I guess, behind the podcast doors of just forward progress of things that are happening to continue to build Land and Legacy. It's a really important time for us, and we're here, like I said, like Adam said, because of the support you guys have given. So we're excited to be able to be in the position and be good stewards of the opportunity.
And even go out to say that we would appreciate the prayers too.
Oh, yeah.
As we do this. This was a very big decision for us to start this adventure and continue on the right path to hopefully that this whole purpose is to help everyone improve the land. And so prayers for guidance is extremely valuable to us, and that's frankly the best thing you can do for us. So,
bingo.
With all that said, we appreciate you guys.
Pray and share on social media.
That got deep real quick, didn't it?
Woo!
Woo. I saw you get the handkerchief out. We appreciate you guys joining us this week. We appreciate the support. We love you for it, and we will catch you next time.
See ya. Thanks for listening to another episode of Land and Legacy's Hunting and Habitat Management Podcast. If you like what you hear, check us out at landandlegacy.tv. You can submit a viewer question right there, and we're answering the podcast, or find us on Facebook and Instagram.
Feels pretty good knowing that from the beginning of time, God has called us to be a caretaker, gamekeeper, a manager of the land. So with that being said, don't you think we should do it all for the love of the land and the glory to God?